I need to read something from the Bhagavatam. So in text number 7, chapter 15. Chapter 15 is called Purushottama Yoga because it describes the process by which we can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and begin the process of pure devotional service. So the first section, Krishna was describing how to begin the process of bhakti by developing detachment. He presented this in the form of an analogy of the banyan tree and how one must cut this banyan tree with the asanga shastra, the weapon of detachment. And when one does that, then one can, one should approach the Supreme Lord and surrender to Him and seek that place which is His eternal abode. Krishna described the qualifications of those who are eligible to go to that place, and He also described in brief some details about that place, how it's not, how it's self-illuminous, self-illumined. So now text number 7. Mamaivamsho jivaloke jivabhuta sanatanaha magashastan indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So as that abode is Krishna's, so also are the jivas, Krishna's. They are His eternal parts and parcels. Mama eva amsha, Krishna says. They are eva amsha. They are amshas. They are my parts. He said, Krishna says, eva. They are only mine, not anyone else's. So Krishna expresses His sense of possessing the living entities, that they're His. In Sanskrit, the word aham has seven cases, as all of the other words do also. Aham, mam, maya, mayam, mat, mama, mai. And so mama is the genitive case, the sixth case. Huh?
What's the instrumental?
Instrumental case, by me. Maya? Yeah. Maya, by me. And so Krishna says, mama eva. They are definitely mine. Only mine. Mama eva amsa. Jiva loke. And the living entities in this material world are jiva bhuta sanatana. They're actually eternal amshas of mine. And this statement disrupts the Mayavadi philosophy, which states emphatically that that Brahman, under the influence of illusion, takes the forms of the jivas. And then when the illusion is removed, then the jivas no longer exist. Rather, they are all one. So, but Krishna says, jiva bhuta sanatana, that they're eternally my amsas, or fragmental portions, parts and parcels of mine. So this is a very important verse stating that the jiva is eternal. And we all are Krishna's eternal parts and parcels, and we belong with Krishna, serving Him in the spiritual world. Mama. Thus, we belong only with Krishna in His abode. because we are His. But unfortunately, we are, the second half of the verse mentions, you could put, however, due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which especially includes the mind. Because shastan indriyani, the six senses, wasn't necessary to mention separately the mind, because there's five knowledge acquiring senses, and then there's the mind, which is the coordinative sense, the chief of the senses. It could just say the six senses, but mana shastan indriyani, he mentions it separately because it has some special significance, which we'll see in the following verses. So the living entities are prakritisthani. They are situated in the prakriti. And this is, again, referring back to the Paribhasha Sutra in chapter 13, text 22. Prakriti, purusha prakriti stohi. Mukte prakriti jan, you know. So the purusha is prakriti stohi, situated in prakriti. So here again, prakriti stani kashati, the same words are being used. Prakriti stani kashati. And they are kashati, struggling very hard with the six senses and especially the mind. Because the mind is the reservoir of all desires and aspirations of the jiva. And so though it, within the mind is deposited all of those desires for sense enjoyment, which brings about a new body. And so the word kashati has different connotations. One is struggling hard with the mind and the senses. Another is the word karshan means to pull, like sankarshan. Right? Balaram is called Sankarshan because he was pulled or attracted from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. Right? So Karsha or Krishna means to attract or pull. So it means the living entity is pulling his mana shastan indriyani with him, his senses, wherever he goes in the material world, just like a prisoner in a jail pulls around a ball and chain. Wherever he goes, he lugs around this big ball, heavy iron ball and chain. He's pulling it with him. He's shackled to his leg. Right? And then he carries it, then he puts it down, and then he works, like on the roads, or building some reservoir, like in Russia they had the prisoners, right? Digging up the Stalin Reservoir, which is near the Sukhareva Temple. So we can go swimming in it now. So they get some indirect bhakti umukti sukriti. So the prisoners are pulling around. The prisoners in this material world are struggling with the six senses, and they're pulling those senses with them from one body to another, to another, to another. And the last meaning of the word karshati is, it has to do with this transmigration, as Prabhupada mentions. He says this actually comes from, I believe it's Baladeva Vidyabhushan or Vishwanath Chakravarti. The word karshati, struggling or grappling hard, is very significant. The conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound up by the false ego, and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him in his material existence. The mind is driving him because it contains all of his desires. So it is the driving agent. So that's also pulling him from one body to another, to another. So these connotations are there. But they all have to do, because you may wonder why suddenly Krishna begins talking about transmigration of the soul. Right, in text number 8. But this is the sequence of the philosophy. So as the spiritual world is mind, It doesn't have to be illumined by the sun or moon. The living entities are also mine. They're my eternal fragmental parts. But unfortunately, they're in this material world struggling very hard with the senses. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Text 42, there's some discussion of this verse in the commentary. The translation or the verse of the Bhagavatam is, I am the Supersoul of every individual. I am the Supreme Director and the dearest. People are wrongly attached to the gross and subtle bodies, but they should be attached to me only. Purport. The Supreme Lord is the dearest in both the conditioned and liberated states. When a person does not know that the Lord is the only dearmost object, then he is in the conditioned state of life. And when one knows perfectly well that the Lord is the only dearmost object, he is considered to be liberated. There are degrees of knowing one's relationship with the Lord. Depending on the degree of realization as to why the Supreme Lord is the dearmost object of every living being. The real reason is stated in Bhagavad Gita. Mamayamamsa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. The living entities are eternally parts and parcels of the Lord. The living entity is called Atma and the Lord is Paramatma. The living entity is Brahman and the Lord is Parabrahman. The conditioned souls who do not have self-realization accept the material body as the dearmost. The idea of the dearmost is then spread all over the body. The attachment for one's own body and its extensions, like children and relatives, is actually developed on the basis of the real living entity. As soon as the real living entity is out of the body, even the body of the most dear son is no longer attractive. Therefore, the living spark is the real basis of affection and not the body. Because the living entities are also parts of the whole living entity, that supreme living entity is the factual basis of affection for all. One who has forgotten the basic principle of his love for everything has only flickering love because he is in Maya. The more one is affected by the principle of Maya, the more he is detached from the basic principle of love. One cannot factually love anything unless he is fully developed in the loving service of the Lord. All right, so Prabhupada is describing why we're struggling hard in the material world, because we have given up our love for Krishna, and now we love our body and our extensions of our body, and therefore we are in illusion, struggling hard in this material world, trying to please our body. It's the difference between yugara priti and indriya priti, which you'll find in songs by the acharyas. Yugala priti means love for the supreme couple, for the divine couple, and indriya priti means love for your senses. Nunam pramata kurute vikarma yad indriya prittaya apnoti. The living entities are mad after sense gratification because they are in love with their senses. So the word mana shastan indriyani hinted at the mind's power to determine the jiva's future in acquiring new bodies, which is now described in the next verse. Sharidam yadavapnoti yachap yukrama itshraha krahi vaitani samyati vairaganhani vashayan. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. Shariram yad avapnoti. So it means he gets another body because he's prakritistani, parshati. He's struggling in the material energy and he gets one body after another, struggling with the mind and senses. Yachap ukrama ishwaraha. and he gives up one body and takes another. Here the living entity is referred to as Ishvara, a little controller, because he can control his taking another body. He can actually determine or control the grade of the next body by his activities in this life. Because whatever he does and whatever he desires in this life, he gets a particular body according to those desires and activities. So he has this minute independence, as Prabhupada mentions in the commentary. If he likes, he can change his body to a higher grade, and if he likes, he can move to a lower class. Minute independence is there. The change his body undergoes depends upon him. So he's a little Ishvara. Kahi vaitani samyati vayaganan ivashaya. And he carries his different conceptions, desires, etc. with him to the next body, just like the wind carries aroma. So the soul is a sangoyam purusha. He's completely detached from everything material in this world, but he carries these desires and modes and conceptions with him from one body to the next. So although the soul is free and pure and uncontaminated, just as the air is uncontaminated, just like the air passes over a rose garden, it picks up a very beautiful fragrance. But the fragrance isn't the air, it's just being carried by the air. And similarly, when the air passes over, you know, the back here where the pigs eat and pass through, and the sewage dump, then it picks up this horrible stench. But it's not the air itself which smells. It's carrying the aroma of the sewage. So the living entity is like that also. It's actually uncontaminated, but it's carrying these things with him from one body to another in the subtle body, in the mind. So one might ask, why does he carry all of these senses with him? What does he do with them? Because when someone carries something along with him, usually there's a purpose. If someone's lugging a big suitcase. So the next verse describes why he's carrying the senses with him and his different conceptions. Shrotram chapshu sparshanam cha rasanam granam eva cha adishtaya manaschayam vishayanu basevate. The living entity, thus taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. So again, in the previous commentary, the word karshati, Prabhupada mentions, this process of transmigration from one body to another and struggling while in the body is called karshati, or struggle for existence. And that's based upon the mind. So again, the mind is mentioned in this verse, that because the living entity is bringing his mind with him, that mind determines his next set of sense objects that he wants to enjoy. So it begins shrotram, shakshu, sparshanam, charasanam, granamanja. So the first thing mentioned is the ears. Because the ears are the fundamental or most important sense. With the ears, one can awaken his God consciousness by hearing transcendental sound. Shrotram, shakshu, sparshanam, charasanam, granam eva cha. So we have the five knowledge acquiring senses, the ganindriyas, they are mentioned. And adishnaya, manaschayam, they are grouped about the mind. The mind is the coordinative sense for these other knowledge acquiring senses. The word cha in this verse indicates the karmendriyas, the five working senses, and the five life heirs as well. So
then you have a package of 17 items all packed up in a big suitcase that you lug around with you from one body to another. The Gyanindriya, the Karmindriya, the five pranas, that's 15, and then you have the mind and the intelligence. So you have a big work, a big toolbox with these senses, which are instruments or tools, which you use for. What's the reason he's carrying around this big suitcase? Vishayan upasevate. He wants to enjoy the senses with those sense objects and with the senses. Vishayan upasevate. Vishayan means the sense objects. Upasevate means to enjoy. And you'll notice the root word seva, which means to serve. So he becomes a slave serving his senses, thinking that he's enjoying this, but actually he becomes a slave to his senses. And those senses are grouped about the mind, which is bringing the fundamental conception with him from one body to the next, which brings about another set of senses. So if you have gross and then you have subtle, first you have these conceptions and then you have the actual senses which match the conception. Just like somebody comes to a tailor and he has an idea, I want a suit like this, like that, pinstripe suit with big lapels. And then he tells the tailor, and then the tailor makes it. So he first comes in the shop, he has a conception, and then he comes back a week later and he has the suit. So the living entity has desires, and then later those desires are facilitated by the super soul, and he gets a new body. So the quality of the mind it attracts the next body just like a magnet attracts iron, pieces of iron. So in this way he gets shortram chakshu sparshanam cha. He gets this new set of senses. The quality of the mind attracts this new body. So there's also a parallel or a, maybe you can say, connection between the working senses and the knowledge acquiring senses. It's like we have the eye, ear, nose, tongue, and touch. And then you have the working senses. So maybe you can guess which one matches up with the other, which one. Well, remember here you have the hands and you have feet and you have the voice and you have the anus and the genital. So which one matches up with which one?
The voice and the tongue.
The voice and the tongue. Touch and hands. Yes, that's right. What else? So this one? Huh?
Eyes and feet.
Eyes and feet, that's right. Well, you have to see where you're walking, right?
You watch where you go.
Yeah. Look before you walk. This is debatable.
The anus and the nose.
Yes. Very interesting relationship. When the anus is active, the nose closes. So there's a simultaneous contrasting. Well, mine does. Of course, usually people kind of like the aroma of their body, the lower gate.
And if you smell someone else's, it's really horrible. What else?
Last one for the years, but it's no reason. What for?
This one.
The last one, genitals and ears.
Well, I'll give you this one's actually wrong. Okay? Ears and voice go together. Because first you hear, then you speak. And then the tongue and the genitals are all famous friends, which are in a line. Right? Because the tongue and the genital, if you can control the tongue, you can control the sex desire. So there you have it. So these are all grouped about our dear friend, the mind. He's the octopus who's, you know, controlling all of these things, getting stimuli from these senses and sometimes sending stimuli to the senses. Right? It goes both ways, doesn't it? The senses, like the eyes send messages to the mind, or the knowledge acquiring senses mainly, right? But sometimes the different senses are agitated by the mind, right? So there's a two-way coordination there. Quite a mess, right? Very intricate machine. We're really locked up. Krishna's amazing material energy. Can we turn this on a little bit? Just a little. Okay, now someone might ask, why does one not see this happening? And the answer is, Vimudha Nanupashanti. Alright, let's chant text 10. Utkramantam stitam vapi bunjanam bhagunanvitam vimudha nanu pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Prabhupada says the word jnana chakshusha is very significant here. So the reason why the living entity cannot see him taking one body after another and how he's encased and entrapped by the senses is because he's vimudha, he's bewildered, he's foolish. Therefore, nanu pashyanti, can't see. Bunjanam vangunanvitam. He's so busy enjoying the modes of nature that he doesn't have the intelligence to understand this. He's so absorbed enjoying the modes of nature that he's bewildered and covered by those modes of nature. Therefore, he can't understand how utkramantam stitam vapi, how he's quitting the body and taking another body. So what can be done about this? Pashyanti jnana chakshasha. Krishna can give knowledge to the living entity, and with that knowledge, then he can see. So those who lack knowledge are vimudha. They're foolish. They're blinded by their endless attempts to enjoy. Bunjanam vagunanvitam, enjoying these modes of nature. Because they identify with the happiness and distress which is arising from the senses, they remain unable to distinguish between matter and spirit. They're so much absorbed in the senses and enjoying that they can't understand this. So their intense desire for bodily and mental pleasure has covered their ability to experience their own spiritual nature. They can't understand that they are spirit souls because of this enjoying mentality. And that's discussed again in the next verse, giving some more detail. Text 11.
Yatanto yuginas chainam pasyantyatman yavastitam yatanto prakritatmano nainam pasyantyachetasaha.
The endeavoring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly, but those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, although they may try to. So the word yatanta means endeavoring. So the yogis, they're trying, and they can see, pashanti. But those who are akritatmano, those who do not practice self-realization, those who have not bothered to take the time to purify their hearts by hearing and chanting, then nainam pashyanti achetasa. They cannot see, because they're achetasa. They haven't purified their hearts, so therefore they don't have the proper consciousness to see this spiritual phenomenon, the difference between the matter and the body and the soul, and how the soul goes from one body to the next. So the word akritatmana means that they haven't performed self-realization. And in the commentaries, Arjuna says, is there any way those without knowledge can see you? And Krishna says, yes. And he speaks the next few verses to describe how those without knowledge can see him. Because they can see him in the form of the sun and the moon and all of these things.
Yaraditya gatham tejo jagat bhasya te kilam yachandra masya yachagno tat tejo vidhimamakam.
The splendor of the sun, which dissipates the darkness of this whole world, comes from me. And the splendor of the moon and the splendor of fire are also from me. So perhaps some of you remember Krishna mentioned these before in this chapter. Which verse was it? It was in verse number 6. And he said that na tad bhasi te suryo na shashanko na pavaka. Though my spiritual abode is not dependent on the sun and the moon or fire. And now he mentions that he is the source of these things in the material world, because although these things are not needed in the spiritual world, they are needed very much here in this material world for us. Because, as Prabhupada describes in the commentary, that in the morning, in the east, the sun rises and it illuminates all the things which are enjoyable to us. The gardens, lakes, parks, orchards, and different objects of sense gratification. The sun illuminates all of these things, and thus we can enjoy. And the moon is the deity of the mind, and it's also called anamaya because it gives life to the vegetables. It gives juice and life to the vegetables. So it's both manamaya and anamaya. Because the moon is a representative of Krishna. It embodies some of Krishna's potency. And that is necessary for us to live, to have the moonshine for the fruits and vegetables. And the fire is necessary also, the fire in our stomach and the fire outside for cooking food, for factories, for building, for making bricks, for houses, and so many things. Fire is necessary. So all of these things are necessary in the material world, although they're not needed in the spiritual world, and Krishna is the source of these things. They come from Him. So Krishna is discussing on a cosmic scale here, in both of these verses, how He is providing things for the conditioned souls, those who are not able to see Him, those who want to enjoy in this material world. Krishna comes as the sun and the moon and as fire, and He'll come in different forms now, also in the next verse. Gamma vishacha bhutani dharayamyam ojasa pushnami choshadhi sarva somo bhutva rasatmaka. I enter into each planet, and by my energy they stay in orbit. I become the moon, and thereby supply the juice of life to all vegetables. So gam avishacha bhutani dharayamyam ojasa. So Krishna enters the planets and dharayamyaham ojasa. By His ojas, by His energy, He holds them together. Just like one holds a fistful of dust together, Krishna holds the earth planet together. If He were to let go, the earth planet would just scatter, just like dust would scatter in the wind. This is by Baladeva Vibhushan, and Prabhupada mentions this in his commentary also. His energy is sustaining each planet just like a handful of dust. Were it not for Him, all the planets would scatter like dust in air and perish. So that's Krishna's energy. He's holding together the earth. Otherwise, what is that? What is holding together the earth in one sphere? It has to be something. It's Krishna's energy. He says here, He enters into the planets. Gravity. The void. And Krishna also says, so pushnami choshadi sarva somo bhutva rasatmaka. He becomes soma, the moon, and thus gives rasa for all of the vegetables. So this is on this cosmic scale. And now, Krishna is describing on the individual scale. So not only does He enter into the planets, but He enters into your stomach also. Aham vaishvanaro bhutva praninam deham ashidah pranapana samayukta pachamyanam chadurvidham. I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuff. So this is another form of the super soul in the stomach. And some yogis, they meditate on this form of the super soul. Some of the devotees also meditate dearly on this form of the super soul. And so Krishna is supplying the earth, which is the accommodating substance to grow anything. He's giving the moonshine and the sunshine, which helps grow these things. And He also enters into the stomach and becomes the fire so we can digest. Actually, it's like He's doing everything. The only thing we're doing is putting it in our mouth and tasting it. He grows it and He digests it. So He's actually doing all the work. And we just enjoy. And He just so happened to put all of these little sensory hairs on our tongue so it will give us a pleasant feeling as it slides down our throat. And it just so happens all of those tastes correspond exactly with those little fibers on the tongue. Some for sweet, some for sour, some for salty, some for pungent. It's bitter on the tongue. And now the last verse. Not only does He enter into the stomach, but He enters into your heart as well. sarvasya chaham hridisani vishto matta smatir jnanam apohanam cha vedaischa sarveraham eva vedyo vedanta krit veda vidiva chaham.
I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known. Indeed, I am the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So the first half of the verse is in connection with the previous three verses, 12, 13, and 14. Because here, Krishna is describing how he allows living entities to enjoy in this material world, and how they can see him or experience him in some ways that even though they may not have knowledge in the form of the sun, the moon, digestion, the form of gravity. And Krishna also enters into the heart and he provides remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. This is for those who want to enjoy this world. He gives remembrance of things performed in past lives and desires from past lives. He instigates one or prods one with one's past desires and thus allows the living entity to fulfill his desires. Because when we take a new body, we may forget what we have enjoyed, what we were attached to. We wanted to become a king or a great sitar player or something like this. We know, I think someone mentioned that Ravi Shankar took seventh birth as a sitar player. Right? So when he saw the sitar when he was a child, he became excited. There it is. That's my instrument. Right? And that's what happens to the living entity. And because it's Krishna in the heart, there it is, there it is. Get it. That's what you want. That's what you were enjoying before. So Krishna reminds the living entity how to do that. And we can see also that there's, basically that we can say there's proof of this, you know. There's empiric proof, because living entities, sometimes they have this vast ability to play piano or sitar or something like this at the age of 8 years old or something like this. There's a Yugoslavian boy touring the world playing Beethoven and Bach and Mozart. And he plays it fabulously, like amazingly, so much people paying so much to get tickets to see him all around the world. So this is from the last line. So Krishna gives us remembrance, the smriti, how to seek that which we were trying to enjoy. And he gives us knowledge how to acquire those things. And then he also gives us forgetfulness of our original position as his eternal servants. Because if we were aware of all of these things, if we had knowledge of our eternal position, or if we were aware of all of the past births we have taken, and all of the pain and misery and deaths that we experienced, we wouldn't be able to function. We'd have a nervous breakdown. So Krishna kindly allows us to forget all of those things and forget that we're his eternal servants and forget that we are spirit souls. And in this way we can enjoy. Just like an actor on the stage, the more he forgets his identity, then the more he's a good actor. And the director, a good director, inspires the actors to forget their actual identity and just to absorb themselves in a new role. So Krishna also does this like a director. He allows us to forget our previous role and to play and enjoy our new role. Because otherwise we wouldn't be able to enjoy the role as a little enjoyer. So he provides all of this. Let's see here. Now, Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur says, just as the fire of digestion is within the stomach, I am situated in the heart of all beings as the principle of intelligence. Indeed, from me, in the form of the intelligence principle, comes remembrance, forgetfulness, and perception. That means perception born from contact with the senses with their objects. So this first half of the verse is dealing with the enjoying conditioned living entity and how Krishna provides and facilitates that enjoyment by allowing him to forget certain things and allowing him to remember the things that he wants and forget the things that he doesn't want. And this. Then the second half of the verse describes how those who want to give up this false role and take up the original role and seek liberation from this karshati, the struggling heart, then Krishna comes in the form of Vedantakrit, the Vedavyas. He was the compiler of the Vedas. Krishna takes the form of Vaipayana Vyasa, Krishna Vaipayana Vyasade, or different Vyasas and different ages. There's different Vyasas. So Krishna empowers that person. He enters into that person as his Shakti, and that person becomes a Shaktivesh avatar. And he, Vyas means to divide. So he takes the one Veda and he divides it into four. And then he teaches it to his disciples, and they have other disciples. And in this way, the Vedic knowledge is spread. So Krishna comes as Vyasadeva. Prabhupada says, the Vedas offer knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, and Krishna in his incarnation as Vyasadeva is the compiler of the Vedanta Sutra. And he says, the Supreme Lord is so full that for the deliverance of the conditioned soul, he is the supplier and digester of foodstuff, the witness of his activity, and the giver of knowledge in the form of the Vedas, and as the Supreme Personality of God is Sri Krishna, the teacher of the Bhagavad Gita. He is worshipable by the conditioned soul. Thus, God is all good. God is all merciful. This is at the end of the first paragraph. And this summarizes this section from 12 to 15. So Krishna is all good, all merciful, and he is a kind... he's performing his activities of charity for the living entities. And here Krishna says that Vedasya Saver Aham Eva Vidyo, that I am the goal of Vedic knowledge, that the Vedas are meant for understanding me. And Prabhupada, at the end of the second paragraph, Srila Prabhupada says, the Vedas give us direction by which to understand Krishna and the process of realizing Him. The ultimate goal is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedanta Sutra 114 confirms this in the following words, Tattu Samanvayat. One can attain perfection in three stages. By understanding Vedic literature, one can understand his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the first one. Second one, by performing the different processes, one can approach him. And three, at the end, one can attain the supreme goal, who is no other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So here, Prabhupada is describing Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojan, which is going to be given by Krishna in the last five verses of this chapter. The next three verses are Sambandha Gyan. Verse 19 is Abhideya Gyan. And verse 20 is Prayojan Gyan. In because those are very philosophical, we won't attempt to dive into it right now. But since Krishna is describing the living entity and his how he assists the living entity, and how he enters into the heart and in the form of intelligence provides memory, knowledge, and forgetfulness. I want you just to think for 2 minutes of some experiences that you have undergone in the past, of how Krishna has somehow helped you with knowledge, remembrance, or forgetfulness. It could have a different meaning also. Otherwise they'd all be liberated together.
Yes,
if we're all one.
Yes, you are all liberated Brahman's giver as a past condition.
If one living entity became liberated, then all the rest of them would be enlightened and liberated also, if they're all one. But some are liberated and some are conditioned. Shows that there's individuality. That individuality is sanatana, it's eternal. It's not temporary. There's different supersouls. The main supersoul is in the heart, the one that we meditate on. And those who meditate on those on that supersoul are considered the superior yogis. But there are other yogis who worship and meditate on the supersoul in the other chakras of the body. In the Bhagavatam commentaries, it's in the 11th canto. I can give you the exact reference sometime in the future, maybe Monday or something. That's what?
Oil.
Well, there's not going to be very much oil left. But the gravity is Krishna's energy. It's Him coming and holding everything together. It's a material energy, but it's Krishna's material energy, form of gravity. I mean, he says directly here in the Gita and in the commentaries of the Acharyas. So we accept that, because every energy has a source, energetic source. It's not just energies. They always have some source. We would call it gravity, but what is it? Just because we have a name for it doesn't mean we understand it. We don't understand it. The yogis who yogis can, by kind of mystic meditation, they can transcend this law by connecting with the Supersoul, who's the controller and producer of this law. But the scientists can't transcend. Just because it's eternal it's not any evidence that there's no source. In fact, it would probably indicate even more that there's a source. Why would anyone say that if the energy is temporary, then it could more possibly have a source, or energetic source, but if it's eternal, then it doesn't have a source. It's not logical. Whether it's eternal or temporary, it has a source. Jnanis, those who perform yoga, karma yogis, even if they what? They can understand it. If they're liberated, they can see it directly. Yeah, because their minds are clear. Chaita Dharpana Marjanam. Through the yoga, their minds are clear, but those who are akritatmana, they don't do yoga. They haven't bothered to purify their consciousness. They're achetasa. Because they're so dull, they can't see it. To develop the sharpness of consciousness, there has to be a yoga system. Otherwise, they like animals. Okay, we'll stop now.